Isaiah chapter 40, verses 1 to 5. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed, that her sin has been paid for, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. A voice of one calling in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be raised up, every mountain and hill made low. The rough ground shall become level, the rugged places a plain. And the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all people will see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken.
Well, we're now going to spend a few minutes looking again at the passage which we heard read earlier from Isaiah chapter 40. The words will all be on the screen. If you have a Bible, you could open it up, but you won't need that. The words will be up there, and so will the headings for this little talk that we're going to have. I want you to look first at the picture that we have here. It obviously shows a starlit night with the moon shining very brightly and this is a great star that we read in the New Testament. Had come specially to illuminate Jesus' coming. And in the artist's imagination, we have a stable, and we have two parents of a newborn baby, which is Jesus Christ. And today I want to share with you some things about Jesus Christ and about his coming at Christmas. This is something which those of us who come here regularly are very, very excited about. And if you're a visitor, let me try to explain how we feel about it. Do you know how it is when you see a new show on television, and it's so good, it's so funny, you want to tell all your friends about it? Or maybe there's a clip on YouTube of a chipmunk skateboarding, and it's just so funny, this chipmunk skateboarding. It's unbelievable that a chipmunk could skateboard, but it's there, and it's on YouTube, and so you share it with your friends. Well, in a way, it's a little bit like that for us who are Christians, but even more so, because we've come to know Jesus Christ, not just about him, though we do know about him, we've come to know him, and we just love and long to tell other people, because he is so exciting, has become so important and central in our lives. And if you're here as a guest this morning, that's really what I'm going to be trying to do in our look at this passage. And what we see in this passage is, I've broken it down like this, three words about Jesus Christ. As Debbie has said, as we've seen already, Isaiah lived a long time before Jesus, round about 700 years. And he was part of the Jewish nation. And these words that he wrote were words to encourage the Jewish nation when it was in a very bad way. They'd been conquered, they'd been taken off as slaves and exiles, and they were living almost like being in a prison camp in some ways, as almost like enforced refugees or captives in the capital, Babylon, of the great superpower of the day. But Isaiah was writing words that would be for them, to show them what God was going to do in the future. And these words spoke of many good things that God would do, but especially of what God would do through sending his son, Jesus. And so we understand that these words apply to Jesus. And the first word that we see is the word comfort. The word comfort. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem. Isn't it just wonderful that when God speaks to these people whose lives are broken and have been taken forcibly far from home, he has a message of comfort and encouragement for them? What I haven't said is that the reason for them being conquered and the reason for them being moved so far away from home was all their own rebellion against God. They'd turned away from him. They'd rebelled against him. They'd had to pay the price and face the consequences of turning away from the true God. And what does he say? Comfort, comfort my people. I wonder if you've ever thought of God like that. I wonder if you need reminding, or perhaps to hear for the first time, that this is how God speaks to us. In our broken lives, in our broken world, he says, comfort, comfort my people. What does that English word comfort mean? Well, I suppose the first thing many people think about when they think of comfort is someone coming alongside you, maybe putting an arm round you, maybe saying very consoling and kind words, especially when life is hard in some way. In the picture, you can see the person on the right there. We don't know what's happened in their life, but something has happened in their life. They're hunched over. They're wiping away tears. Do we know what that's like? God says, comfort, comfort my people. And we can see a picture here of the way God comes to us in our sadness and brings us comfort. But in the Bible, the word comfort means something else as well. It does mean that God is deeply sympathetic and full of compassion for every single one of us. But it means more than that. It speaks of giving strength, of bringing a fresh power into our lives to lift us up from where we are. Yes, God is deeply sympathetic for us in our need, but he isn't just sympathetic. He comes with strength to do something about our deepest needs. I just wonder if you've thought of God that way. Maybe you don't have a very clear idea of what God is like at all. Maybe you wonder sometimes in some part of your heart whether there is a God. The Bible tells us, yes, there is a God. There is one true God who has made all of us and this world and this universe. And that he is a God who speaks words of comfort. And those words especially come to us, those words of comfort come to us at Christmas, as we think about the birth of Jesus Christ. So the first thing we see is God's comfort. Then the second thing we see, the second word, is God's call. And he says, a voice of one calling. And he's looking forward. It's a dramatic scene. He's looking forward to a time when someone, a voice, unnamed here, will call out something really, really important. And this was fulfilled when the cousin of Jesus Christ, John the Baptist, who was a bit older than him, started in the wilderness in Palestine, calling out to people this message. And let's hear the message of God's call. In the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. And so it's moving to a picture of building. Building roads. Building roads for God to travel on. For God to take his people on. That's the picture. I thought we should try and illustrate it. This is one of the great roads that's been built in the world. It's in the Karakoram Wilderness, which I think is between Pakistan and China, somewhere there. This is a mighty highway which you can drive along, which has been built through the mountains. Here's another road. This goes through the desert in Iran. And someone has built a road so that a track has been formed so that vehicles can go through the desert from one place to another. But there are many kinds of road that are spoken of here that require an awful lot of earth moving and an awful lot of changes. Because he goes on to say, every valley shall be raised up, every mountain and hill made low. The rough ground shall become level, the rugged places a plain. If you build a road and you don't make things level, or smooth. It's going to go up and down and up and down and up and down. The Romans tried to build roads like that sometimes, and they made a good job of it, but it's much easier if you can find a way that's flatter and just have a nice flat or smoothly sloping road. Again, this is a picture of what God calls for us to be ready to happen in our hearts. Here's a picture of a road being made with some sophisticated equipment, which in a very precise way is leveling off the pathway for the road. Now, we don't normally go as far as Isaiah is talking about here, about mountains being made low and about valleys being lifted up, but sometimes nature does that for us. Here's a picture of the eruption of Mount St. Helens in 1980, Mount St. Helens, which is on the west coast of America. It was a great big volcano that erupted, and the top was blown off. So you can see here what it was like before the 18th of May 1980, and then afterwards, and the red dotted line shows how much has been taken off. Every valley shall be raised up, every mountain and hill made low, and the rough ground become level, the rugged places a plain. I'm saying this is picture language. It's what God is calling us to allow to happen in our lives and our hearts. So someone will say, well, how does that picture relate to me? Well, there are some people on earth who are all lofty and they're like mountains. They think they're very successful and they're full of pride. And the problem with thinking you're very successful and you're full of pride is that there's no place for God, and God's highway can't go through your heart. And what's needed is for that to be brought low. And for those of us who are very smug about ourselves, very satisfied with ourselves, we think we don't need God. What it needs is for God to bring us to a position, to bring us down, to make us realize actually we need God and we need him desperately. Cambridge, in my experience, is full of lots and lots of people who've been lifted up and who are like great mountains who think they're fine. But how happy they are when God brings them down and levels them off so that he can come into their hearts. But then the other kind of picture is of a valley. And again in Cambridge, I find lots of people who are like valleys, great dips down, and they feel very low about themselves and they feel they can't cope in life. And they know they need help, but they don't know where that help is going to come from. And God says, allow me to lift you up. Let's make it all level so that I can come into your heart and your life. I wonder whether this morning you can hear God speaking to you through these pictures that Isaiah has given us. I wonder if you can hear the call of God saying to you, that's what I need to do for you, either to bring you down or to raise you up. And because many of us are quite mixed people, it can even be a bit of both. Well, we've seen God's comfort and we've seen God's call. And then we're going to see, thirdly, God's coming. And the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all people will see it together. What does glory mean? Glory means whatever is really good about someone being seen. So you can have a goodness in someone which isn't seen, and the glory is when it is seen. Now, that's a bit abstract, isn't it? Let me try to explain. What is the glory of an athlete? Well, the glory of an athlete is when they win a race. This is one of the greatest athletes, Usain Bolt. He's even got time to smile for the camera on this amazing occasion. I can't help noticing how much taller he is than everybody else as well. Lucky man. The glory of an athlete is seen when you see them winning. But to bring it down to earth, not many of us are athletes like Usain Bolt. What's the glory of a surgeon? The glory of a surgeon is when they take on a difficult operation, they take it on, they work through it, they do whatever's necessary, cutting something out, putting something in, I don't know, and it's all sewn up and the person is well again. That's, you see, the glory of the surgeon in doing that. Here's one that I know applies to a lot of people here. What's the glory of a computer programmer? When you've written a piece of code and it works, and you've got the bugs out, and your piece of code does whatever your piece of code was supposed to do. And there are all sorts of people who know nothing about you, and they know nothing about computer code, but their lives depend on you getting your code right. That's the glory of a computer programmer. What is the glory of God then? Well, we could say many things about the glory of God. It's sometimes compared with the shining of a really hot and bright sun. And sometimes in the Old Testament, God would appear in that way and it would be dazzling and people would be unable to see very much. That is the glory of God. But the glory of God at Christmas looks rather different. This is the glory of God at Christmas. Mary becoming pregnant. Not by her husband Joseph, because they never slept together before their marriage. By a great miracle of God himself, in which God himself entered Mary's womb. In one way, it's very simple. You can explain to quite a young child that Jesus is both God and man. In another way, it's bafflingly complicated. But don't worry about the bafflingly complicated bit. The glory of God was seen when Mary became pregnant and then when Jesus was born. And we think of God himself, the second person of the Trinity, lying there, reaching out with his finger and putting his little finger into his mother's hand and clenching his baby fist around her finger. This is the glory of God himself. God the Son becoming Mary's son and becoming one of us. And the Bible says this isn't just a myth. It really happened. And it's not just that he appeared to be human, but actually he was sort of superhuman and different. Well, he was still God, but he was totally human. With a human body. With all its potential and frailty, like our human bodies. A human mind, a human psychology, a human soul, as well as being God himself still. This is the glory of God, that he came for us as a vulnerable baby. What does this show us about God? It shows us how much he loves us. He wanted to communicate himself. And previously he'd spoken through angels. And previously he'd spoken through prophets. And the revelation, much of it was verbal. And that was great. And it all pointed forward to his coming in the flesh to become one of us. He came to enter our lives, to enter the life of a human being, to experience what it's like to be in pain, to suffer, to struggle. He came to be with us, to show us that he cares and that he wanted to bring us back to God. Now, as the rest of his life unfolds, we can see how that works. We can see him coming and preaching and doing miracles and showing people that he was truly God. But we also see that principle of vulnerability continuing as he allows himself to be nailed on a cross and doesn't stop people doing something that was completely unfair and unjust. We see the glory of God in the coming of Jesus Christ. Now, I wonder how those words have struck you this morning, these three great words, God's comfort, God's call, God's coming. Just think for a moment, perhaps, of the one part of this that has particularly struck you. Something has moved you within, something has clicked into place. Something has made you interested and given you an appetite to know more. It may be it's almost like a kind of spiritual smell, and you haven't quite experienced this, or haven't experienced it very often, but there's a sort of smell about this that, you know how some smells you want to keep away from, but other smells you want to draw near because they're just lovely. You walk down the road and there's this nice smell, and you move towards a rose bush or a sweet-smelling plant. I just wonder if you've got a bit of a scent of something spiritually beautiful here. Just focus on that. Attend to that for a minute. Which part of these words about Jesus is that? Is it that God is actually someone who cares and has compassion and who wants to bring a whole new spiritual strength in your life to lift you out of the difficulties and mess you have, especially the mess of just being disconnected from God and not being sure that you'll be safe when you die? He does care. That's just not just a feeling. That's something God has given you to connect to something objective and real. His comfort. Maybe that sense you have is, yes, it's to do with his call and knowing actually, yes, you do need to be taken down a bit so that God can be in your life. Or, yes, I want God to lift me up. I want God to make that level road so that he can be there in my heart. Is that what you're hearing? Is that connecting with you? Ask him to do that work. He will. Or perhaps the part that has moved you has just been something which has been there for you in the run-up to Christmas this year, either for the first time or maybe this is a reminder of something which has been there and you've lost slightly, that yes, there's something very, very special about that stable and about that baby and about that manger. And you're hearing that actually that special thing is even more special than you ever thought. Because this is the glory of God in a baby's crib coming to you to share your life so that he can lift you and you can share his life. If these things have touched and moved you this morning, we'd love to be able to help you more and to talk with you. We have a wonderful evening discussion group called Explore. And we have some leaflets, we can tell you about that. The next session starts in February, so it's not long to wait. We'd love to invite you to that. It's a chance to talk with others, to bring all your questions, and to explore more what we've been thinking about this morning. As I've said, if you're a woman and from another country, then the International Women's Group and the International Women's Group Bible Studies would be great places for you, and they're during the daytime, which may or may not be more convenient. Or it may be that just this morning you'd love to talk to someone right now. You just have a question. You're not ready to become a Christian yet, and that's fine. People take some time traveling along a road. But if you do have a question, why not talk after the service to the person who brought you or someone you know here? They would love to be able to hear your question and to interact with you more. Or if you're perhaps on your own and you don't know anyone, you could come and talk to me, or I could introduce you to one of my colleagues. We would love to be able to talk to you. It may be, of course, that there's someone here who's on a journey and you're very close to the point where actually you do want Jesus to be at the center of your life and to become a Christian. If that's you, we would love to be able to share that moment with you and explain how you can take things forward. Let me just read the passage again and then I'll pray and then we'll sing our last song. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed, that her sin has been paid for, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. A voice of one calling, in the wilderness prepare the way for the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be raised up and every mountain and hill made low. The rough ground shall become level, the rugged places a plain. And the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all people will see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. Let's pray for a moment. We thank you for these wonderful words and what they speak of. O Lord, help us to follow the scent of Jesus that we have smelled this morning. Help us to follow that sweet fragrance and to find him. Amen.